Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
By what?
By aliens.
Oh. Then you know what your greeting should be?
Garbledygoo?
No, either live long and prosper or nanu nanu.
Well, how about nanu nanu, live long and prosper, then die?
Okay.
That's what my friend always used to say, and I thought that was very good advice.
Yeah, because you can't really help it. Mm-hmm. Well, the last part you can't help, so you might as well do the other two first.
Exactly. Plus, Andreika sent us a lovely alien on Facebook today, so let's just do that one first, because aliens.
Okay, that works. You know. So did that come in today? That's when I first saw it.
But yeah.
Okay, cool.
Apparently, Stitch from Lilo and Stitch is a real living ocean creature.
So, it's on Aquarimax Facebook page.
Yes.
Andreika from Oregon put it up there.
And it's the funkiest thing ever. It's pretty.
Yeah, it is.
I like the colors.
It's also known as a blue dragon.
And it looks...
What is it, Glaucus Atlanticus?
Totally like an alien. I think it's Alienus Foreignus Extraterrestrialis.
Okay, I thought it was Glaucus Atlanticus, but I could
be
wrong.
Well, you're probably right.
it's a nudibranch. A sea slug.
I don't know if you can say nudibranch in mixed
company.
Oh,
I totally just did. And it's very cool looking.
It is. Thank you for sending it, Andreika. It's gorgeous, and in a very bizarre alien life form kind of way.
And it talks about how it eats organisms with nematocysts, am I right? Is that what it was?
Venom cells?
Yeah, stinging cells is what nematocysts are. So, and then
like Portuguese man-o-, it eats Portuguese man-o-.
And migrates the stinging cells to other
parts.
What
is the plural?
Parts of its body.
Portuguese men of war? Portuguese men of wars? Portugueses?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Portuguese! Put your ducks! Okay,
it must be pretty late. Okay. Portuguese... Though, I'm not sure what the plural is, but let me tell you this. Each apparent organism is actually a colony of organisms, so it's already a plural. Even one is a plural.
Oh, that's confusing.
Yeah, it's a faunophore.
Schizophrenic Portuguese men's of wars.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, it was cool.
Anyway, yes, it was very cool.
And while that particular species is not unique in using the stinging cells of other organisms to protect itself, I think that particular phenomenon is fascinating anyway, and this organism is very beautifully colored and very strangely shaped, and it makes a nice combo.
And if you have never seen Lilo and Stitch, you should go watch Lilo and Stitch.
Do you remember when you got that nudibranch in Hawaii?
I loved it, the Spanish dancer. Yeah, it was so beautiful. We were just at the beach, and we were right near the shore.
Yeah.
I was, you know, maybe like mid-thigh high in the water. It was
over
maybe
like,
waist
it was
high.
Like
I don't
Kahala,
know.
It wasn't
was
it?
Something. At something. Yeah, it was a windward side. But it was just floating along in the waves like...
Yeah, and it was the color of flames.
Graceful. It was red and yellow and...
Yeah,
it was really pretty. It was very hypnotic and graceful.
We didn't keep it. We just released it right after. We just looked at it for a few minutes.
But it was very cool.
Fun. Okay.
It's kind of like an ocean fairy.
And occasionally we get small nudibranchs showing up in our tank, our marine tank in Hawaii too. But never that big and never that colorful.
No.
Just wee ones.
Okay. They were neat though.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, other than that, we have... Matt in Perth, Australia, and David in I don't know where.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to... I think David has contributed before,
okay.
But I forgot to check where he's from.
I'm sorry, David, I don't know where you're from.
It's okay.
My page here is blank.
My fault, sorry.
And Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Tom in Provo, Utah, and, of course, that contribution that we just had was from Mendrake in Oregon.
So. Yeah, so are we going to listen to Matt's recording then?
Yeah, although I think you have a couple things for us first before we get started.
I do. Oh, yeah.
You do.
I totally do. So tell me what I have.
You do. Well, I think you wanted to talk about some data on some downloads.
Oh, I was going to talk about the data and the downloads, but I didn't.
I know you haven't yet.
I mean, I didn't. I was planning on preparing some data on the downloads, but I didn't. So I'm going to do that. Directly, I'm going to do that, and then we'll do what we are going to do about the downloads, the data with the downloads.
But where's the pellet with the poison?
Okay, there's another movie quote for you. But yeah, Tom in Provo asked us about data on the downloads, basically from which countries our show was being downloaded.
Oh, yes. Downloads.
And I haven't gotten there yet, so...
We're moving. It's a busy week.
But we'll get there. I haven't forgotten.
And it's our daughter's birthday this week.
Yeah, shout out to you, Tom, reminding myself to remind myself again later that I will do that and to give you hope that I haven't forgotten, because I haven't. Okay.
Okay. Bristle noses.
Oh, yes. I shipped a couple of bristle noses out. Remember, I may have spoken about this, that I was having some bristle noses in a 20-gallon tank in our bedroom, and they were kind of kicking up sediment a bit.
And making things happier for amphipods.
Yes. And I thought, well, let's see what happens if I remove them. I didn't really have a place to put them. So I decided to sell them, and I've still got plenty of them. Probably have 15 of them spread around in other tanks, so on. So sold this pair. It is a proven pair. They've already had one batch of fry. So I sold them on Aquabid, and we shipped them out today. Kelly shipped them out, actually. I packed them in the bags, and she shipped them out today.
I just went to the post office.
Yes.
And utilized a little packing tape.
Yes.
That's it.
But it was still most appreciated. Anyway, I'm not sure why I wanted to bring that up. I'm sure I had a reason. It may come to me
later.
I
think it got lost in the lateness of the day.
Okay, well, let's go on. What were the other things I wanted to say then?
Potassium chloride.
Is that really the next thing? Oh, yeah, yes. Potassium chloride. Okay, this is cool. And this is very relevant, I think. Okay. If you buy liquid potassium supplement for aquariums, for aquarium fertilizer, that's one of the, out of the macronutrients in aquaria, that's one of the ones that tends to be limited. I mean, fish produce a lot of ammonia, which plants can utilize either as ammonium or nitrates, right? And so you have a pretty good supply of that in most cases, unless you have a really big plant load or plant population in the tank, and then you might have to supplement it, but usually you don't. And phosphate is similar. There's enough in the fish food that it's usually not an issue. Potassium, on the other hand, is a little harder to come by from just adding fish food and doing water changes and so on. So it's a limiting factor. And most aquarium fertilizers you buy contain iron and potassium if they're just a general purpose plant fertilizer for aquariums that you buy. There are many other different types, of course. You can fertilize particular nutrients, and they have trace element mixes, and they have comprehensive mixes. But anyway, if you just go and buy a general one, that's what it is, potassium and iron in general. Anyway, I was doing some research on that to try to think of a cheaper source, because it's basically really diluted when you buy it in the pet store. Okay, and I figured, well, there's got to be other ways to do this, and I had remembered reading some articles on it in the past about using, like, no salt. So I looked into it a little bit more, read a few articles on it, and...
No salt that people just use at the table?
Right, which is basically potassium chloride with a few other minor ingredients. And I found that
Does it taste like salt?
And it apparently tastes salty. I haven't tasted it, but there's another brand called New Salt, NU-Salt. No pun intended, with a dash of salt there.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But New Salt is apparently even, it has even fewer ingredients, and none of them are problematic in aquariums, but the main ingredient is potassium chloride. And so, I am investigating its use. I'm using it. There are a lot of people who have been dosing it for a long time with no apparent ill effects and with lots of positive ones. It's bioavailable to the plants, apparently. So I'm dosing my tanks now with the New Salt. And there are varying dosages suggested out there, anywhere from 1 teaspoon per 10 gallons to 1 teaspoon per 50. I'm dosing a little conservatively now, and we'll see how that goes with the plants. But so far,
which
it hasn't caused any problem. All of them.
Oh,
all of the tanks I have plants in, which is pretty much all of them. And the another interesting thing, and I'll put the links up on the show page, but there is a technique developed to control algae. Basically, the idea is if you're dosing enough potassium, then potassium is no longer a limiting factor, so the plants will use all this phosphate in the system, and then algae doesn't get any phosphate, and so it can't grow, because algae needs phosphate. So do plants, but plants can store it for longer, and so they sequester it all before the algae has a chance to do anything.
That's nice.
So it can be effective in controlling algae. I've got that. It's not a big problem, but there's some of that hairy algae in the goldfish tank that's growing on the Anubias. Mm-hmm. It's not like rampant or anything, but it's kind of unattractive, and I'm wondering if that might help.
I guess we can't really put the frog bit in there like in the other tank because the goldfish will eat it.
Exactly. Or and it's goldfish. Nothing like the same sort of problem. It just has a little, you know, fuzziness on the leaves. It's not a big deal, but it might help. So I'm interested to see how that goes, and I'll let you know.
Okay, so we're actually going on through the contributors now.
Yes, we are.
David just put a comment up on Facebook, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I wish I was a local so I could sit in on the class that Russell will be teaching. Would be a great place to have the t-shirt show up as well, which is a brilliant idea. That's Are you allowed to do that?
I don't know how that works, but
you should ask them.
I'm glad he brought that up, though. You know, I realized when I saw his comment that I didn't put the link up on last week's show page. So I'll put it on this week, and I already put it on this week's, even before we recorded the show.
Oh, good.
And I'll put it on last week's, too.
And I think we really are planning on doing t-shirts. It's just lots of things are on hold while we move.
Yeah, but we'll get there. I have a design in mind.
Hopefully this summer. Mm-hmm. Let's get them done this summer.
So thank you, David.
It'll be a...
I wish you could be there, too.
Summer present. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of gift-giving holidays in the summer.
Not as many.
We'll just pretend it's everybody's unbirthday. Okay, so we have Matt in Perth in Australia,
mm-hmm.
and he has sent us in an audio clip.
Yeah, so let's give a listen, to Matt's clip.
Hello, Aquariumaxes. This is Matt from Perth, Western Australia. I've been inspired by your most recent audio contributor to make my own contribution. I love the segment on dither fishes. I'm thinking of getting to dither fishes for my 4-foot-long tank. The reason I want to get them is because of the Rift Lake cichlids I have at the moment. The largest one is about 12 centimeters. The smallest ones are the babies, and some of them are only a few centimeters long. They like to hide, and they really hide a lot, and it just makes not looking at them that much fun. So what I'm hoping is that if I get an appropriate dither fish that is fast-swimming and hardy, like maybe an Australian rainbow fish, then I chuck them in there, and then the cichlids will go, oh, it's safe because these fish are swimming around the top, so we can come out more, and it'll just make looking at the fish a lot more fun. So I was wondering if you had a suggestion, aside from the rainbow fish, or if the rainbow fish is the best solution for a dither fish for aggressive African rift lake cichlids. I don't know the exact species I have. I wish I could tell you that, but even the fish shop thinks they're a crossbreed. And that's where my other problem is, because they like making babies, and there's quite a few babies, and I can't sell the babies, and I assume at some point I'm just going to have too many fish. I don't know if it'll just reach a natural equilibrium where any more babies will just get eaten, or there just won't be enough food, so some of the babies won't survive, and there'll just be only so many fish that it can support. I was wondering of your thoughts on that. Can fish essentially just keep breeding and breeding and breeding, or with the resources stop them at some point? So, yeah, I would love to see some photos of a new 100-gallon tank. That sounds very exciting once you've managed to move, obviously. And thanks for the podcast, and that's all for now. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
Wasn't that cool?
That was fun. I like it when people send us audio clips.
Me too. It's a lot of fun. So,
especially when they're not from the U.S. Not that I don't like audio clips from our U.S. contributors, because I love those too, but I just...
The international flavor.
Yeah, it's very fun.
Yep. And by the way, if you want to send an audio clip, you can always call our number on the website, 801-477-0629, and leave a message. It's a 3-minute limit if you do that. That's an easy way to do it. If you'd rather do it a different way...
If you want longer than 3 minutes,
if you want longer than 3 minutes,
back.
So that's possible. We can always splice them. Or if you want higher audio quality, you can do what Matt did or what Tom did and others have done. Tony's done it too. Is you record it with your own equipment and then you just send it as an attachment to email, info@aquariumaxes.com. The preferred formats, I'll tell you right now, are MP3 and WAV, but we can usually convert most of the other formats. It just saves us a step if you send WAV or MP3, but we don't really care. We're just happy to have it. So there you go. But anyway, let's get down to Matt's questions. So the first one was basically about which ditherfish might work in his tank with his Rift Lake cichlids. Now, There are a number of Rift Lake cichlids out there, and as Matt indicated, he's not sure which species he has, and there are some that are more carnivorous, some that are more herbivorous, and their aggression varies widely. Mm-hmm. So we do have to keep that in mind while we're talking about possibilities. But I really like his suggestion, and I've included a link to a website that talked about using Australian rainbow fish as dither fish in a tank like that, with mbunas specifically. And I don't think Matt specified mbunas, but he did specify rift-like cichlids. So they're either mbunas or, you know, something, another cichlid that has somewhat similar habits and so on. And like I said, the aggression varies widely. But it sounds like that's probably one of your best options, because Australian rainbow fish tend to be quick, and they're not too small, so they can't just be swallowed outright by mbunas, at least not when they're adults. They get fairly large, and they can swim fairly quickly. And they also like fairly hard alkaline water, like the mbunas. So I think that's a great choice. Another one that some people have mentioned is the giant danio, because they're pretty big, the giant danios.
It's pretty big.
And they're also quite fast, so that might be another good option. But a lot of cichlid keepers just say don't use them, don't use dither fish.
Don't use dither fish at all?
Just use mix cichlids that are about the same size as your own cichlids. Get a lot of species and kind of overcrowd the tank, and just keep your water changes and your filtration up, and they will tend to be, the more the merrier. They will tend to hide less and act, you know, they'll relax a little bit in terms of territoriality if there are enough of them in there, because they can't maintain a territory. Either that, or you maintain enough rocky, you know, crevices mm-hmm. that they all have one. But either way, it can be kind of complicated. But they're not the easiest fish to keep alive without some damage done. I mean,
yes, that's true.
They'll scrap with each other no matter what you do, to some degree, usually. But sometimes the overcrowding, you know, it's not exactly ideal for them, but it can reduce aggression. And then, but if you do want to try the dither fish, that might be a way to go. And one thing I would suggest from personal experience, just see how the light's hitting the tank. Just make sure that, this is what I noticed. When we had our mbuna tank, and this was years ago, but when we had it, it was sort of facing the west window, I think it was, something like that. Or was it a south window?
It was more of a south window. Yeah.
And it wasn't right up next to it. It was across the room from it, but it was enough so that kind of got glare in it. And we couldn't really see the fish. And the mbunas were hiding a lot. And so we moved it shortly thereafter, once we realized that's what was going on. We moved it to another part of the room, and so there wasn't any of the window glare hitting it at all. And it was a completely different tank.
And the fish were very active
and very outgoing, and it was different. So that might be something to consider too. And you may want to consider just adding more mbunas. But if you do want to do dither fish, I think your suggestion of the Australian rainbows was a good idea. And then the next question was about basically the carrying capacity of the tank. Will the fish just keep breeding until they...
They will if they're guppies!
Well, yeah. I have personal experience with that. Guppies will overcrowd a tank with breeding to some extent until it's a little bit over the healthy, you know, zone, I guess you might say. In my experience, I can't say that my Rift Lake cichlids actually reached that point where they were over, but I would say it depends so much on the dynamics of your tank. You know, it could depend on how much cover there is, whether you're more of a heavy feeder or a little lighter of a feeder, how much algal growth there is in the tank, and so on. I think there are really so many different factors that can influence that. But, you know, any system does have a carrying capacity, and it's possible for the individuals in that system to overshoot, as it's called. You know, they get to a point where they have exceeded carrying capacity to the point that then their population is low on resources and can crash to a low point and then, you know, hopefully recover. But so I think that's possible if you had the right situation where, well, I guess the wrong situation, but it could happen if you have the factors that would lead to that, where there are so many resources that the fish reproduce beyond their capacity, and then there are enough resources for long enough that you could get to the point where suddenly they run out quickly. So I think it's possible. But if you have enough of the adults are picking off enough of the young, I don't think you'll ever reach that. I think you will find they'll keep it under control. I know that some people use Cynodontis catfish for that.
To pick off the...
Some of the larger species of Cynodontis catfish.
We've used dwarf frogs for that sometimes, not with
umbunas,
but with other populations.
Yeah, it's true. So there are ways to do it, and it sounds like, though your tank hasn't reached the point where the population's that big, but I would say it can be possible for it to, the population to grow beyond its bounds of health and balance. Okay?
We forgot to take our break. Maybe we should take it now.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Piscean Alley.
Okay, we have Mick next. And he says, thinking of recent shows, I have kept Harlequins with Cardinal Tetras no problem. They make a nice contrasting show, too. And then he's got developments in the fish room.
Yeah.
Says, I went on a fish shop tour last week with some club friends and picked up a pair of Splash Tetras. There had been a spawning in the shop's tank, so I scraped the eggs off the cover glass, and despite being bumped about in the car the rest of the day, they hatched 2 days later and are growing on well, feeding so far in infusoria. The female of my pair is starting to bulk up a bit now, so hopefully more eggs are to be laid in my own tank. I picked up 3 blue rice fish. Am I going to say this again wrong? Asked Russ several times beforehand, how do I say this? I could try it. Oriseus? Oriseus?
That's pretty good. I'd go with that.
What would you actually say, though?
I'd say it like that, Oriseus. Why not?
Oriseus, okay. Mm-hmm.
With confidence, that's the important thing.
Wow-o-ray?
Sure.
That is something from a 60s comic book. This is my wow-o-ray. Instead of like my freeze ray or my heat ray, this is my wow-o-ray. When I spray this at you, you are wowed. Okay. And you look at me and you go, wow. And then you're so wowed. But in a super villain kind of way, you're so wowed that you don't resist my nefarious plots.
I don't resist your nefarious plots anyway.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad. Okay, so anyways, he's got these fish.
Okay.
At the last fish club, and it turned out to be 2 males and a female. Been feeding them up well on white worm, and on Monday a glob of eggs attached to the female's vent. I had a spawning mop, and by evening the eggs were gone. Hopefully they're in the mop, so I removed it to a hatching tray. The next day, another glob of eggs, so another mop was added and put it in the tray later that day. They tend to have a 5 to 7 day hatch, so I will be looking for free-swimming fry over the weekend. These are a great little fish and very interesting in the way the female trails the eggs before depositing them on plants or a mop. I bred quite a few a couple of years ago, and they are a really fun project for anyone looking to do the first egg-laying fish.
See, I think that's a great suggestion for a first egg-laying fish. See, this is kind of a fun theme. He's got splash tetras, which actually lay their eggs above the surface of the water on an overhanging plant, or the aquarium lid if they're in a captive situation. And then he's got these other fish that lay eggs in an unusual way by the female has this sort of cluster of grapes kind of thing going on until she rubs them off against plants.
Mm.
So he's the bizarre spawning oddballs of the fish world.
Oh, there you go. That's a good title.
On.
Yeah. I have a group of 5 Corydoras aeneas bronze, which I have also been conditioning these last few weeks. We've been plagued by cool weather here. Oh, here too. It was, 47 today?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I should not have to use the heater in the end of May. I'm just a sicken wrong. Okay, anyways. Been plagued by cool weather here and low barometric pressures, but as we have had a few warmer days, I decided to do a 50% water change with rainwater, collected from my water tub outside, and see what happened. Huzzah! Next morning, three patches of eggs splotched on the aquarium glass sides. I scraped them carefully off that evening so they had time to harden slightly, moved them to a hatching tray, and this morning saw they had hatched and I had little swimmers. Fantastic!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a fecundity fest going on in the fish room.
That was lovely alliteration.
Well, Mick, all the credit goes to Mick for his fecund fish. That's cool.
It says, I've also seen a few white pearl shrimplets, which have grown on a bit now, so fingers crossed the populations are on the up again. I've had many tiny shrimplets hatch, but always disappear until now.
Yep. Well, we hope the shrimplets will survive. And
indeed.
Good luck with all those little fry. That's one of the most amazing things of fish keeping, is watching those tiny little fry grow up and just observing the whole process. It's a lot of fun.
It's pretty cool.
So thank you, Mick.
And let's go to Tom in Provo.
Tom in Provo. Okay.
Sorry. Tom says, I just watched the video from Podcast 163 in which we see amphipods in planaria feasting on food meant for your bristlenose placos. It was interesting, but not a little creepy. I'm not sure if you are bragging or complaining. Is the video a celebration of the amazing diversity of aquatic life, or a cautionary tale about overfeeding? Am I correct that these creatures are descended from others that were intended from the fish? Aside from aesthetics, are they harmful to a tank? Is it your intention to eliminate them by some means, or do you consider them a welcome part of the ecosystem? Also, I'd like to suggest that on some future podcasts you consider common aquarium myths, ideas that have been spread and that people quote-unquote know about keeping aquaria but are not in fact true. That's a good idea.
That is a great idea. In fact, I'd like to ask everybody to send some in. We can make a good collection. Maybe a top 10 list.
That would be good.
So that's the call-out for this week. Just send in aquarium myths. And we can play Aquarimax Mythbusters.
Ooh. Myth splashers?
There you go.
Okay, so are you bragging or complaining?
Well,
I would interject that Russ doesn't brag.
Okay. Well,
I usually have to tell him that it's okay to say nice things about himself.
Well.
But I also think this is your psychiatric reading by your wife tonight.
Okay.
You do think it's cool that there's so many different critters, but you don't want them there. How about that?
That's probably pretty close. I would say that this is a great question to bring up, and that I think this is both a cautionary tale and kind of a celebration of the amazing diversity. So,
see,
like what you said. Yeah.
Do I know you or do I know you?
You pretty much do, yeah. And another purpose, I think this will help serve, I hope it helps to serve aquarists in general by helping them to identify some of the hitchhikers they discover in their aquaria. Maybe if they see these, oh, those are planaria. Okay, now I can look up planaria and see how to control
them
and things like that. So, first of all, I want to treat these two species separately because they're pretty different as I answer your question. So, let's address the thing of overfeeding that you brought up. Is this a cautionary tale against overfeeding? Let's talk about amphipods first. Well, in terms of overfeeding, once amphipods are in a planted tank, they can thrive on plants alone. So
even if it's not overfed.
Right. Overfeeding is kind of a moot point because they have a nearly unlimited source of food right there in that planted tank. So planted tanks with amphipods need to rely on predators or some other control measures to keep the population in check, because food is not going to make a dent. Although I guess if you overfed the tank, in addition to having a planted tank, they would reproduce even more. But you know, you're not really going to control their population that much by reducing the food because they have an unlimited source of it. Was the introduction deliberate? Not really. The amphipods were hitchhikers on plants. I think it was water sprite that I bought in Hawaii about 8 or 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been with me ever since. Kind of serves me right for not doing the potassium permanganate bath of the plants when I got them. Of course, I probably couldn't have gotten any in Hawaii anyway.
Yeah.
But the females actually carry the eggs in amphipod reproduction, and then they release the little babies, kind of like, you know, red cherry shrimp do.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to that. But the young are so tiny that they're basically invisible So
you can't really tell.
You can't really look at plants and say, oh, there's amphipods on this one, because it doesn't matter. They're too small. You won't see them. And they can even go into a bag, and you can ship plants. You know, they can be in the mail a week with just damp, not in immersed in water, and the babies will be fine. And you put them in a tank, and they'll start going even if you don't see them. So it's hard to prevent them, even, you know, shipping plants from Hawaii here and so on. They hitchhiked, and it was... They just stayed with me that way. Are they harmful? Well, and this is, once again, I'm talking about amphipods first. They're both a blessing and a curse. I have cultured them as a food source. They're a really excellent food source for most fish. And dwarf frogs, you know, they do great for wide size variety of fish. And they're excellent food in terms of nutrition. And they have some roughage, and it's they're good stuff. And if you have a planted tank with any predatory fish, even small ones like guppies, they never really reproduce to pestiferous proportions.
They just give them snacks.
There will be a few that hide out, but most of them will be eaten by the fish. So they're completely welcome addition to the tank in that case. They don't ever reproduce to the point where they cause problems for the plants. But if in a planted tank with just shrimp, or say dwarf quarry cats, or bristlenose plecos, things that don't really eat them...
Mm-hmm.
Then they can become little moss-munching, plant-perforating pests.
Ooh, another good one.
They're just awful. And they won't hesitate to eat fish eggs, so that can be a problem if it's in a spawning tank. And it is rumored, though I can't really confirm or deny this, that they will attack teeny shrimplets.
Oh.
And my tank upstairs in our bedroom, that hasn't proven to be an issue, because the shrimp are reproducing like crazy now. And there are still a number of amphipods in there, but even when there were more, the shrimp were growing up, so I don't think that's too much of an issue. Now, do I want to eliminate them or welcome them? Well, I have elected to use the dwarf frog as a means of control, and they are continuing to live in the tank, as was evident in the video. They're greatly reduced in the numbers that they were before I put the frog in there, and the damage to the plants now is very minor, whereas before it was significant. So...
And we have a happy frog.
Yeah, we have a happy frog. I only have to feed him like once a week, and I don't even think he really needs that. He's usually got a fat little belly, and I see him hunting all the time. But they're not anywhere near to the population they were before. So I've elected just to use that as control. Now let's address planaria in terms of overfeeding. Well, I have seen tanks, most notably in some of the big box pet stores. They shall remain nameless. That have planaria plastered all over the walls, literally. You look in there, and there's just every couple of square inches, you've got one on the aquarium walls, all over the front, the back, and they're all over the bottom, too. And I'm fortunate I don't have this issue. I think most of the difference is the fact that I probably feed a lot less than they do in the pet stores, and the tanks are less heavily stocked than they are in the pet stores. And so, like I've mentioned on the last podcast, I think I really don't see planaria on the surface. Hardly ever. Once or twice I'll see one, but not often. And I did, though, kind of worry when I saw that many planaria appear in a small space shortly after feeding. I mean, that is a space where I customarily feed them, so maybe they were just hanging out there, but it sort of gave me pause. I kind of wonder how many are down there. But
like roaches, if you see one, there's like 1,000.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. But... As I mentioned before, I've shifted out that pair of bristlenose plecos, so that should reduce the bioload in the tank and the amount of food I have to put in the tank. And so that will probably help keep them under control, but they really haven't reached proportions where I'm too worried about them. Was the introduction deliberate? No. They were hitchhikers. I'm not sure when they showed up. The first one I saw in that tank was probably a couple of months ago.
I would interject, though.
Yes?
They're not very hoopy froods.
No.
Even if they're hitchhikers.
They don't even notice sass where their towel is or anything.
They totally don't.
And they are the creatures that have been kept in labs for years to demonstrate their fabulous regenerative powers. I mean...
That's true.
The Wolverine would envy these guys. They can grow their heads back.
You can cut them in half.
You can cut their head in half, and each half will grow a head, and then you have a two-headed planarian.
Which is kind of freaky.
Yeah.
So we're glad that they're little.
Yeah. But they're not really used as live food. In my experience, and I believe in the experience of others too, most fish don't appear interested in eating them, so they're not much use. in terms of live food. I'm not sure whether the dwarf frog gets them or not. I've never seen evidence either way.
I wonder if he would think they were slimy.
I don't know.
I would think they were slimy.
Yeah, he probably would. Some species of fish eat them, I've heard. Like some gouramis or something will eat them. Mm-hmm. Certain species of gouramis will eat them. I'm not sure. I haven't tried that. And I believe Panicure will take care of them. That's an antihelminthic that's used to for treating dogs with worms.
Hmm. And you can put it in the water.
Yeah. People use it to treat Hydra and so on, and I'm almost certain I've read that it will treat Planaria. So if it does get problematic, Panicure,
mm-hmm.
It's a brand name. It's capital P-A-N-A-C-U-R.
P-A-N-A-C-U-R.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's supposed to help. So I may try that if they get too crazy, but I really would rather avoid using the chemical controls unless I find it really necessary. Partly because I just don't like putting chemicals in the tank if I can avoid it, besides things like potassium chloride, which I don't mind at all, and that's a chemical. Or, you know, and it's also kind of expensive. It's like $15 to go get a box of Panicure. So, anyway, we'll see. I probably won't try anything unless I notice that they're reproducing too much. And are they harmful? Well, not really, although I wouldn't trust them with fish eggs again, kind of like the amphipods. They're mostly just a nuisance, not very attractive.
The shrimp, they don't bug the shrimp.
They don't seem to bug the shrimp, no. They do compete for food with everybody to some extent, but mostly just a nuisance. And so, yeah, that's about where I am on those guys, I guess. Yep. So that is a great set of questions, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think that's about where we are for this week, isn't it?
I think that's everything.
So thank you to all of our contributors. We appreciate it every time. And once again, our request this week is to send us aquarium myths so that we can talk about in the future. And
to watch out for aliens.
Right. And another request is, if you do want to send us an audio file, we would love to have it. You can send it in any format you want, but our favorite formats are WAVE and MP3, because then we don't have to convert them. We can just put them right into our sound editing program. So, now we will say, may the fish. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.